Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Public Library Podcast.
Shh. Sorry.
Here's your host and podcast librarian, award-winning poet, future best-selling author, and host of one of the most listened-to radio shows in America, Helen Little.
Hello, book lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Public Library Podcast. My guest today is Bernie Weiss. He happens to also be someone that I work with, but his book is Ace It, How Sales Champions Win New Business. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, happy to be here, Helen.
I'm happy to have you here. So let's start with telling everybody what your book is about.
So it's called Ace It, How Sales Champions Win New Business. And what it is new business sales book for business-to-business sales that it really breaks the sales process down into 10 easy steps to follow. And it's really written for college students that want to get into sales. It's written for current salespeople that might have plateaued in their career and want to get a new ideas and new impulses and concepts from it. It's written for sales managers who maybe manage a sales team and want to need like a teaching framework and a step-by-step guide for their sales team to follow. And at the end of the day, it is a sales book that covers the entire sales process from beginning to end. So from finding a prospect, through reaching out to them, having the first meeting, second meeting, all the way to getting a deal done and negotiating it in the final stages of the process.
You wrote this book during the pandemic. Was that your plan all along to write it, or was it the pandemic that motivated you? What really made you say, now isn't the time for me to write this book?
So the idea came earlier. So I've been, just a little background too, I've been teaching and training many salespeople at iHeartMedia for many, many years. And over the years, people always said to me, oh, you should write a book on those concepts and tactics that you're teaching. And you kind of, you know, don't take that very seriously. And then 2 years ago, when I moved from a more sales-oriented and sales management-oriented position into a general management role, that's when I really started thinking about, you know, maybe I should write a book to capture everything that I have been teaching, because who knows if I do it 5 years from now, if things are still relevant at that point.
Right.
So, of course, I didn't find the time at that point. I was working, you know, 12-hour days already, and I just couldn't figure out how to, on top of that, write a book. And then the pandemic hit. And the pandemic, you know, we started working from home in the middle of March. There were a couple of weeks where we all, I guess, tried to figure out, look at what does our workday look like going forward?
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought, you know what? If there is a time to write it, it's actually now. I don't have to commute to work, so I'm already saving an hour probably back and forth. So why don't I use that time that I'm saving for writing the book? And that's when I started doing the framework and the layout of the book and figured out how many chapters it would have. And then I just started writing. But yeah, it was definitely the pandemic helped get me started for sure.
What's funny is I used my commute to write. So when I stopped commuting, I stopped writing for a while. I mean, I picked it back up eventually, but you had actually the opposite effect.
Right.
So it's interesting. You talked about who you had in mind when you wrote this book. Well, now we're hearing about the Great Resignation, people looking for a new professional path or interested in a career change. What would you say to someone who's like considering something new and how this might help them?
You know, there's this stereotype I feel out there about salespeople that they have to be extroverts, they have to be social, they need to be able to command a room, all of those things. And I think that leads many people to not even consider sales as a career. The reality is, and I can say this from experience, but there's a ton of research on that too, that it's actually introverts that most of the time are better salespeople. And one of the reasons why that is introverts are following a process much, much more. So they really break down the entire sales process into minor steps. They create routines for themselves that they follow. They're disciplined. And that's really what makes the difference. If you just think about our sales team here at iHeartMedia, when I just look at the top salespeople, at least half of them are absolute introverts. They might not admit that they are.
Interesting.
But they are just really structured in their approach and are the exact opposite of what many college students would think about a salesperson. When I interview college students specifically, and I usually ask them, okay, what do you think a good salesperson has to be like or do? The first answer I'm getting, I'm applying for the position because I'm very social. And that's just not what sales is about. And I do think you're right. With the great resignation, people are reevaluating their careers right now. And we are definitely seeing more people reaching out to us that have never worked in sales before, but are now starting to consider it. And hopefully that book gives them a little bit of a guide what it actually would be about, what they're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, as I read through it, that's what made me think of the question is, I was like, wow, this is almost like a handbook if you're considering making a career change and you want something that's broad-based, because you also included that if you're thinking about selling big ticket items, not just media or something that's B2B, but that you could learn from this. And I thought, what a great tool if you're really considering a different line of work.
Yeah, I tried to make it as accessible as possible, as practical as possible. I used stories and analogies and templates and scripts that are easy to use. Again, just to give someone who has never done this before a little bit of a framework what the job would actually be like, and to just make it easy for them.
How long did it take you to write this book? You said you took your commute time. Did it take you a year?
No. So I think in overall hours, I actually tracked it, and maybe we'll talk about the process too because it was interesting. The overall hour amount was about 450 hours. But that includes everything from writing, reviewing, rereading, editing, like all in was about 450 hours. And I think one thing I've learned is, and I think I did that right, actually, when I look back now, how I approached it, I approached writing a book like any big project that you give yourself. So, you know, when you just think about, I want to write a book, or I'm going to write a book, it's really intimidating.
Yeah.
It's just a big mountain to climb. And for many, it's just too big of a mountain. So I tried to really break it down. I looked at it more as like, I have 25 chapters and I have a certain time of the day when I'm going to write every day. So I want to get into a habit. So almost like people, you know, when you work out once a week, it's much harder than when you work out every day at the same time, because you just have this routine. So I just had these 2-3 hours a day every night that I would just sit down between 8 and 11 and would just write. And then same on the weekend, it was just weekend mornings. And I would just stick to that routine. And that, I think, really helped me. And then every time I hit one of those milestones, like, again, any other project or New Year's resolution you set yourself, and the milestone for me was finish a chapter. Every time I finished a chapter, I treated myself to a bottle of champagne in that week. So there was an immediate payoff for me, and that kind of kept me on track. And the last thing, similar to any project, I tried to visualize the cover page. And I felt like that just kept me going, just to think about this is what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Even if I had absolutely nothing yet in writing, I was already thinking about, okay, this is what the cover is going to look like. And that just motivated me throughout the process.
You know, it's interesting because I did the same thing. I created, you know, my habit had been write on the train when I'm commuting. And I created the writing hour. So 4 o'clock every day, everything stopped. And I shut everything else out and I would write for an hour. And if I started at 4:05, I could write till 6, but I could not stop before 5:05. I had to do a solid hour every day. And I actually liked that better than being on the train. But I had become so trained to writing while I was moving. At first, it was very challenging to sit still and write.
I did read that about Hemingway, by the way. So he had his like writing hours. It was every morning he would write for like 3 hours. And then the rest of the day, you know, he would go fishing and skiing and do all those like fun things. But he would stick to those 3 hours, even if he had the biggest hangover from the night before, apparently.
If I wasn't motivated to write anything, I would write, well, I'm going to write today, and just start writing until something came up that was on topic with what I was writing. Yep. How did you find your publisher? Did you work with an agent?
did not work with an agent.
Okay.
So the process of really, I wrote the manuscript and had absolutely no idea how to then bring it to market. And what I did is actually I followed some of the advice in the book, which partly says before you pick up the phone as a salesperson and make a cold call, see if you know someone who knows the person you want to reach out to, right? So I just figured, okay, let's go through my contact list and maybe there's someone on there who knows someone in the publishing world. And I didn't even have to go that far because we here at Light FM had a client who was working for Wiley Publishing. And he was an advertiser. That was 15 years ago, though. So it was like 2007. But I still had his contact information. So I looked up his name. I hadn't talked to him in 15 years. Looked up his name. He was no longer at Wiley. He was working at a foundation right now, but I just reached out on LinkedIn and I just asked him for advice. I was like, I wrote a book. Can I just get 30 minutes of your time and just give me an overview? Like, how do you get a book to market? How does it work with agents, self-publishing, all of that? So he responded immediately. We set up a call. And on our call, he said, you know what? There's a guy who used to work with me at Wiley. His name is Matt Holt. And he just started his own imprint within Ben Bella Books in Dallas. You should pick his brain. So he didn't say anything about, hey, maybe this is a potential publisher for you. He just said, like, he would be a great person for you to talk to just to get a good overview about the publishing industry. So I reached and he introduced me and I ended up talking to Matt. And at the end of the first call, Matt said, you know, if you want me to do this with you, I would love to do it. And I said, okay. So what do I...
I don't think I've ever heard anybody get a book published that simply.
No, I am a trained salesperson, so I didn't say yes right away. I did say, hey, let me think about it. And did ask a lot of questions on, hey, well, what would be the next step? What would I need to do? And I don't know, a week later, we talked again. And I said, here's what you need to do. And that was really a more traditional approach. You got to write a proposal and you give me a very clear outline what that needs to include and then submit it. But at the end of the day, on the first call, I had my publisher.
That's
and
amazing.
And I know that is a crazy story because I've talked to so many people that have
one
published
right here.
Books and so many different publishing houses and pitched so many times. That was not my my process.
I love that story, though, because what it does is, I think, for people who are listening who are aspiring authors, it gives them hope and a different insight. You know, you do have in mind who the reader is. But I felt like there were so many things that anyone who wants to learn the process of selling anything could benefit from, just the basics. Would you agree that whether you're selling B2B or selling shoes or selling yourself, that there's some benefit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There are many overlaps and many things in that process that really apply in any sales situation. And one of the ways I try to really bring the point across is I used a fictional prospect throughout the book. So it really shows from the first chapter to the last, like how for that fictional prospect did the salesperson find the lead? What did they say on the phone? What did the email look like that they sent in order to set up the first meeting? What were the questions they asked in that first meeting? What did the proposal look like? What questions did they ask when they negotiated at the end? From what I'm hearing is that really brought the process to life and made it easier to understand how it really works in the real world and works in the real world in many different industries. So yes, obviously I'm in media and it is definitely a little bit heavier in terms of media examples, but it will absolutely work in many other industries, including business to consumer sales.
Your mother wrote a book, right?
She did.
Yeah, you kind of dedicated that. And what was hers about and what impact did it have on you as an author?
The biggest impact for me was that one of my, when I visualized that I'm writing the book, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't just a cover. There was something else to it. And that was the acknowledgement section at the end of the book. And in hindsight, I actually would do that a little bit differently, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But what I found is the acknowledgement section, usually people don't read, but people that know you read it. So what I thought from the beginning was, I want to give my mom a shout out, and I want to give her a public thank you and for everything that she did my entire life for her. And that was always at the top of my mind. I wanted to have that moment when I can give her the book and she can act. And she, by the way, doesn't really speak English, but she's reading the book and she's fighting way through it. But I wanted to have that moment where she can actually look at it and see her name in it, see that the book is dedicated to her. And that one paragraph that I wrote about her in the acknowledgement section, that was really important to me. In hindsight, this is what I was getting at. In hindsight, what I would have done differently is I would have mentioned many more people than I actually did.
Ah.
And I'm not sure if you read Questlove's book, like his autobiography that he wrote 4 or 5 years ago. So unfortunately, I read it after I published my book. But what he did is his acknowledgement section is literally like 20 pages long. And he has hundreds of people in there that he's thanking for all different kinds of things. And I probably wouldn't have done 20 pages, but there could have been at least 2-3 more pages.
Yeah.
Just to say thank you to a lot more people than I actually did. For some reason, I felt constrained. I felt like, you know, it shouldn't be more than 2 pages, 3 pages max. I should have included more. One person I did include was, his name is Cal Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
He's the store manager of Barnes & Noble, Fifth Avenue, one of the largest bookstores in the country, in the world. Because he taught me how the whole promotional aspects work, with like, how do you get a book displayed in the window, and what is that process about? And I mentioned him in the acknowledgement section, and I went a long way with him.
Oh.
And he still talks about it. He mentions it. And when he has a chance to display my book on Fifth Avenue, because maybe someone dropped out in the last second, I get pictures. I just got one again last week. It was like, did you know that your book is in the window at Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue again? And I think maybe not the only reason, but one of the reasons Cal is doing that is that he was mentioned in the acknowledgement section. I think he really appreciated that.
Wow, that's really cool. I'll have to remember. That is something I do have to remember. Well, I have an interesting story. Early in my career, back when the owners actually ran stations,
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I worked at a 2-station cluster. It was country and adult contemporary. It was in my hometown of Salisbury, North Carolina. The owner was the general manager, and he was one of my early mentors. After I got off the air almost every single day, I would sit in his office and I would learn the business of radio. It was better than any class I had. We went to the same college at UNC. But he taught me about towers and signals and engineering. But he impressed upon me every single day that I needed to go into sales. And he was like, you need to be in sales. It's the best long-term career option in radio if you want to make money and a good living. So I took his advice. And I actually sold at a startup urban radio station and an adult contemporary station. It was a big powerhouse in North Carolina, WRAL. So I sold at both of those stations. I don't know if you ever knew that about me.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow.
However, I found that my passion was creating the commercials. So I was like the one-stop shop because I could go out and do the sale. And in the process, I could go back to the studio, create the spec, and then bring it back to them. And that's actually how I sold.
That's a very smart way to do it.
Well, it worked, but I didn't love it. So I ended up going back into programming, and the rest is history. But as I read your book, I thought about, what if I had had all of these tools? I mean, it was a very different industry back then. what a sales path specifically would have looked like for me if I'd had your systems to help me throughout this industry. Who knows? I might have turned out to be sales superstar.
Radio was famous to be an industry where you would get hired and then people would give you the phone book and said, good luck.
Yeah.
And that's what happened, unfortunately. And I think that is very different now. Yes, you have books like that, but there's also so much more technology around it, like to find phone numbers and find email addresses and find decision makers and connections on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
All these different databases that I think it is easier to get started in sales now than it was, I don't know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, where it was really more like the Wild West. Here's the phone book and now just go and call.
I also bought into that notion that I needed to be more of an extrovert. I was an extreme introvert, which is kind of why I chose radio, because I didn't have to see the people I was talking to. It's funny now, as I've grown, and recently I was watching some old videotapes of me being interviewed in my 20s, and I'm like, wow, I love that girl. She has no idea where she's going. But
you do realize you're talking to 60,000 people every time you're opening the mic, right?
So I don't see
them. That's Yankee Stadium full.
But I can't see them. So that's what makes the difference. It's like I can talk to them all day without having to see them.
It's a lot of people.
So why don't we take a break? And I would love it if you would do a reading from ACET.
Sure.
How Sales Champions Win New Business.
Go ahead. Turn the page. We'll be right back with more of the Public Library Podcast.
Check out other episodes of the Public Library Podcast, a place to check out books.
The Public Library Podcast with Helen Little.
We're back on the Public Library Podcast with Bernie Weiss. He's the author of ACET, How Sales Champions Win New Business, and we've been talking about his book and the system he created and is sharing with everyone, and now he's going to share with us something from the book and a reading.
So I'm going to do the chapter one, which is called Game, Set, and Match. If you followed men's tennis in the 1980s, you know that the most dominant players at the time were American John McEnroe and Czechoslovakian Ivan Lendl. In the history of tennis, there's probably never been a more natural tennis talent than John McEnroe. He had a unique style that couldn't be taught or copied, and he possessed a special talent, a distinct feel for the ball on the racket, especially at the net. With his aggressive serve-volley approach, he was able to impose his type of play on his opponents. He read his opponent's shot accurately before they even hit the ball and instinctively moved to the right positions on the court. A lot of McEnroe's game had to do with instinct, and he constantly invented new shots and new angles. He was a talent that comes around only once in a generation. You can think of John McEnroe as a natural-born tennis player. But would it have been a good idea for junior players like me to model their games after McEnroe? No, because it would have been almost impossible. That's why most players back then tried to follow closer in the footsteps of Ivan Lendl, one of the first offensive baseline players in men's tennis and someone who had a much higher impact on the next generation of tennis players than McEnroe. Just think of Jim Courier, Andre Agassi, and Thomas Muster. They all had a strong forehand, excellent footwork, good mental game, and the ability to play for 5 hours without letting up, after putting themselves through grueling conditioning workouts to prepare for a tournament. But most importantly, Lendl approached his game very systematically. Many of his points were constructed the same way. He returned the ball to the center of the court, very deep to the baseline. He moved toward the backhand side of the baseline to open up the court with an inside-out forehand. He stepped up to start dominating the rally with his forehand, first to the left corner, then to the right. And once he had his opponent on the run, he had his choice of shots to finish the point, usually a crushing topspin forehand. Thousands of hours of training went into being able to pull off points like this, and Lendl needed them because he created and followed a system. He broke down a point into several mini-steps, all of which had to be completed for Lendl to maximize his chance of winning it. You can think of Ivan Lendl as a systematic tennis player, the exact opposite of a natural-born tennis player like John McEnroe. Because of their totally different approaches to the sport, their duels were entertaining to watch. Who was more successful? Ivan Lendl won 8 Grand Slam trophies, John McEnroe 7. But that's not the point. The point is that 99% of salespeople will be more successful by following Lendl's process-driven approach than McEnroe's improvisational style. While every sale is different, every sale is really the same. Each sale is unique because sales champions not only find a way for each of their customers to feel special, but also to tailor their products and services closely to the client's needs. They make adjustments based on the type of business, the personality of the person to whom they are selling, and even the physical setting of the sales pitch. But almost all sales also follow the same pattern. That's why every sale is also identical. The salespeople who are effective during every step of the sales process, from prospecting to asking for the order and implementing the solution they sold, are the ones who are consistently beating their new business budget. Having a framework that you follow every single time you attempt a sale can turn you into a sales superstar. Sales champions excel when they figure out how to win new business and then replicate their approach over and over. And if you follow the process and concentrate on each individual step of it, deals will happen automatically without using any fancy closing techniques. The more you can break down the sales process into individual steps, the quicker you can become a true expert in each of them. No wonder Ivan Lendl became a much more successful tennis coach than John McEnroe in their second careers. Lendl had a systematic process broken down to the last detail that he could pass on, while McEnroe did not.
Thank you for that reading. You know, it was interesting. I would have assumed that most people were natural born salespeople. And another thing that I thought was interesting too, people who are ashamed to say they sell.
Yes. There is still this, again, stereotype of this used car salesman out there, or salesperson out there, who tries to swindle herself or himself into an order.
Right.
And that's just absolutely not true anymore. Like, sales is a very strategic job. You got to be very buttoned up, disciplined, smart, and many other traits. But it's something we're still struggling with. I still meet college students that just don't consider sales as a career. And when you know media sales, you were a salesperson in media yourself. What you sold were marketing campaigns.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you were a marketer. That's not sales the way most college students understand it. So the college students would love to put marketing on their business card and not sales. And I never understood that. And I always felt like if you have to explain to a new hire
right.
that sales is their career and this is nothing to hide from, and it's something when they ask you at a dinner party, what do you do for a living? If you feel the need to say, well, I'm in marketing or I'm like in strategic partnerships or something, that's for me a sign that they might not be in the right profession.
That actually stuck with me because I'm like, you know what? That's right. I was like, I have met people who have shied away from saying what it is that they do.
Right.
What are you most proud of about this book?
That it's helping people sell more. Because now that it's out in the market for more than half a year, it came out at the beginning of September, I'm getting the feedback. And I'm getting the feedback from different industries, different states in the U.S., different countries in the world. I got an email from Australia the other day, from one from England, one from Canada, and you know, some from the media industry, but also completely different industries, like the mortgage industry. Somebody reached out the other day and felt it really helped them sell more mortgages, and that is what I'm most proud of. That was a little bit my fear, if I want to say that, going into it, that people will not get much out of it. I was what if I put on all this work and I'm putting myself out there with my, you know, framework and my processes and my scripts and my templates, and what if they don't work? I mean, I'm a confident guy. I knew that it worked for me,
right?
But I've never tried them in other industries necessarily, right? Right. Now we know the answer. After half a year, there's many different industries where these scripts and tactics and strategies are absolutely working.
What do you like most about writing?
I like that you start with a blank page, which is a challenge. Like everyone will tell you that, right? Like, yeah. And this was really, sometimes I remember sitting there in my writing hours sometimes with a blank piece of paper, and the first sentence is just so hard. But when you get to, and I always had this, I want to write 1,000 words a day, kind of was partly my goal. When you actually achieve that, let's say that maybe the page is full or you have those 1,000 words, that feeling I love the most about writing. And to just reread what you wrote, make a couple of changes, move things around, and just make it better, I think that's a very motivating task.
Have you always thought you were a good writer?
No. Absolutely
really?
Not. Hmm. Well, first of all, it's not my first language, so that was always a little bit of a challenge for me. But I think I was a better writer in German.
Okay.
But I think I'm a good writer now, and it's mostly because I've been writing a lot.
Yes.
And that's how I think you just get better. Like even before I wrote the book, there's a lot of things I've been writing.
You write something every week that you send out to
I do.
And I look forward to that because I like the writing. I like the message, but I like the writing.
Yeah, well, on this weekly email, I need to really force myself to stay really concise because I don't want to write more than three paragraphs. That's a Monday morning message. People don't want to read a novel at that point, right? So that is actually almost harder to write than a chapter in a book where I felt like I have more freedom and can expand a little bit more. But yeah, I do like writing. And I can absolutely confirm that the more you write, the better you get at it, 100%, like with everything else.
What are you reading these days?
Right now, I usually read a few different things at the same time.
Me too.
I just finished a book called The Power of Moments, which is really, I can highly recommend that. I can't even summarize what it's about, but it's really about how different businesses, but also individuals, just make more out of certain moments than others. So for example, a moment would be the first day at work. Some people start and there is nobody waiting for them. They don't even know where the desk is. They have no computer. Other companies really embrace it. And the first day is a celebration. Everything is set up. They're going for lunch with their colleagues. And that's a moment, right? It goes much more diverse than that. It's a very good book and highly recommend it. And then the one I just started reading is a novel, but it's really based on history, Henry VIII. It's the Hilary Mantel book that is at this point, I think, 13 years old, but won like all these prizes. And I'm like two chapters in and it's sensational. Like her writing is sensational.
You mentioned in the book buying a piano. How often do you play? And was it easy to pick it back up after 30 years? And what's your favorite song to play right now?
Oh, God.
That's a lot of questions.
Oh, God. Well, let's start with the second part of the question. I learned, my New Year's resolution in 2021 was to learn November Rain by Guns N' Roses on the piano.
Okay.
The hard version. There's an easy version, but I tried to do the hard version. That was a massive project. So that I can play now. Sorry, what was the first part of the question?
Was it easy to pick it back up after 30
years?
No, it
was not, was not easy. Oh, how often do I play? That's what you ask. I play once a week on the weekend for for like an hour.
So that was my next question. What's a weekend at Bernie's like? when you aren't working, how do you spend your time?
Sports, a lot of sports, a lot of reading, restaurants. Nothing too fancy.
Okay. We have the same alma mater, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. How did you end up in North Carolina from Austria?
Okay, that is a good story. So it was an exchange program with my school in Vienna. Huh. You couldn't pick the school. The school had relationships with 14 different colleges. You were able to request two. One of those 14 schools was the University of Southern California, USC. And of course, every Austrian at that point watching Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place was requesting the California college. So everyone put that number one, including me. I was sure that I would get picked. My grades were pretty good. I didn't even think about the second one. So I just wrote down University of North Carolina. And then the results come out and it's, okay, Bernie Weiss is going to the University of North Carolina. And I remember the first thing I did is sprinted to the library and looked for a map of the United States because I had absolutely no idea where North Carolina was.
Right.
On the map. And it ended up being one of the best experiences of my life, probably better than USC could have ever offered me.
But it's a great little place. If you could play tennis, because you play tennis in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you could play tennis with anyone past or present, who would you play with and why?
I would have said Boris Becker, but he's about to go to jail, so that's probably not gonna happen. My dream is still to play with either Federer or Nadal. That would just be a dream. Just one point would be amazing, and then get a picture and frame it.
Do you have another book on the horizon at some point?
I have material. I even have a name. I don't think it's gonna happen anytime soon. I'm not sure if it's ever gonna happen. This one is more about management and sales management, because that could be a good combo. I do have the material, but I definitely need a long break right now. So.
Well, don't ask for that because we could get another one. If people want to find your book, obviously they can get it at the Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. But where else is it available?
Yeah, everywhere else. I mean, Amazon.com is probably the easiest. Just look for ACID, Bernie Weiss, and it will pop up.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about your book. This has been a great conversation, a wonderful learning experience for people interested in sales, but also interested in writing. And I appreciate you taking the time
Thanks for having me. It's fun.
Another show in the books. Join us for the next episode of the Public Library Podcast, a place to check out books.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.